Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is an Anfield Wrap special in conjunction with EE's Hope United campaign around homophobia. I'm Neil Atkinson. This is produced by Harriet Pryor. The videos are by Fuad Hassan. And I am joined by Olivia Graham from Homotopia and by Paula Mann from Cop Outs in order to talk about the information that's come out today through a few surveys that EE have done with Hope United around homophobia within football. Before we get into the specific numbers, Paul, in a couple of ways, which, you know, feel as though you shouldn't necessarily say them, I'm actually quite buoyed by a couple of aspects of it, in terms of the fact that it does feel as though, you know, the idea that, for instance, 71% of people in Britain agree that homophobia is a problem in football is perhaps higher than I might have expected, and maybe that's me being too cynical at times or anything like that, but I don't know how you feel about that.
I'm really, really made up that there are so many people who give a damn, and that's really apparent at Liverpool, and Anfield has changed massively over the last 10-15 years, where stuff would just let loose and nobody challenged anything, to a point now where actually loads of people choose to be active allies and choose to express that they don't want to hear that, and that's super positive. But it's also a factor, the fact that they see it still happening and therefore they're upset that it happens.
I think the idea that people don't want it in the football to the degree of, as I say, 71%. It's 71% here of people who are not LGBTQ plus, Olivia. That rises to almost 9 in 10, 88% of people who are. I think that idea that there are people who are genuinely, who do agree it is a problem, I think it suggests a way forward. It suggests the idea that there is, you know, that there are potential solutions. We're here to talk about them. But just acknowledging that there is a problem in the first place, I think, is quite a significant thing.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can only go from where you start, basically. So at least knowing where we are at the moment and how people feel about it. Kind of with Paul on this. It's also nice that they're just doing it, that they're just asking people these questions, because I imagine a lot of people haven't considered this is even a factor of a football experience. I think for most people who go the match, you're only thinking about your day, you know, your match day experience. So it's just good to start having conversations about, well, actually, how do all fans feel in the stadium and at home and just being part of the culture?
And I think it's really powerful that so many mainstream fans realise there's a problem, and they're not, you know, some sort of woke sensitive bunch that think, oh, you know, that's happening, and oh, you know, actually, it's mainstream fans that are recognising there's an issue still in football, and they're prepared to put their hand up and say there's an issue.
Do you think on that, Paul, you know, the journey, you've been involved with Cop Outs for so long now, you know, that has been a long journey. Activism isn't done in a day, you know, it's a slog a lot of the time. I'm sure at times it's felt like a slog. Have you genuinely felt at ease over the last however many years?
Well, to go from over half the Cop chanting Chelsea Rent Boys to, I think there was one person in the ground who was dealt with legally for chanting that, is amazing. And that's happened because we've had conversations. We've had conversations here. We've had conversations with loads of different fan groups. We've described the experience. We've described the impact of what homophobia does and how it others us as ordinary fans ourselves, and all we want is the ability to enjoy the game. All we want is that euphoria of You'll Never Walk Alone extending across the whole of the match for us and not suddenly being othered as something that shouldn't be there. We have seen things change so massively, but there's still some issues, there's still some pockets of issue and other grounds. We know there are more issues, unfortunately. So I've seen huge change, but until we get to a position where there's no need for cop-outs, because there's no homophobia and there's no LGBT plus phobia in general, then unfortunately we're still going to carry on campaigning.
It's to see the shift, Liv, the backdrop of the way in which both mainstream and social media at times, you know, has exacerbated rhetoric around the LGBTQ plus community. It's striking to me that, you know, it does feel as though, and some more data has come out this week in general about British society, that it is growing more liberal at times than you would think and would expect. Again, I'm sort of asking the question from you from a homotopia point of view and from a general sort of lived experience point of view, is that, do you feel as though in your day-to-day that sort of stuff is softening? Do you feel as though that is softening around match-going experience? Have you felt that journey?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, like, unquestionably, like, I think of the difference in growing up a teenager and even wondering whether I would still be a fan if I acknowledged that at like points in my life I was going to be in relationships with women, and definitely at those times in my life kind of really pulling away from the football environment to now it being like we're just sat here chatting and it's sound. Even to the point that, you know, I've been involved with the Anfield Rap for a while and it's never really been about my sexuality. It's just because we're fans and we all just love the Reds.
Almost. Try our best.
Yeah, God. Yeah.
It's a difficult relationship at times.
But on that then, you know, to go through the journey of it, Liv, there's this... People are sort of witnessing it online. People are also witnessing it in person there. And I think that part of what this campaign wants to do and what people want to do is feel more comfortable being able to call it out. It's one thing to witness it. It's one thing to be aware of it. It's one thing to find it distasteful. It's another then to show that sort of allyship. What do you think would help football in general before we speak about sort of the Liverpool experience in particular?
I think, oh God, it's such a huge question. I think one thing is like thinking about the process of calling something out is not, I think there's been like a real push from the mainstream media around this like woke culture and people being really sensitive or whatever, but you've got to see that like what we're doing is like you're punching up, do you know what I mean? You're like, you're challenging any form of power or anyone taking abuse of power or anyone just taking the piss really. So I think just that kind of see that calling something out is just, it's just being sound. It's not, you know, trying to be super, you know,
so liberal. Trying to be right on or anything like that.
Yeah, you're not trying to get one over on anyone. You're just trying to be like, yeah, like it literally happened last night that some chants were going, like one or two people. And I was with Tom and he just went, no, we don't do that. And it was just so simple. I was just like, yeah, that's all it takes. Like, we just don't sing that in here. Do you know what I mean? And I thought, and then it doesn't even turn around, just carries on the game, we get going, you know.
I think that, for me, Paul, from a Liverpool point of view, and this is where when I think about the whole piece around all of football in general, from a Liverpool point of view, one of the most profound interventions in the conversation was the video you did with Jurgen Klopp, where Jurgen himself spoke at length, eloquently, clearly engaged with the issues. And I feel as though that was, you know, when you were talking about, for instance, it says here that, you know, a quarter of those surveyed have witnessed what they've witnessed, that, you know, that four in five feel uncomfortable. I feel, you know, it's the wider population is less likely to take action, you know, 27% or 21%. I feel as though at Liverpool, Jurgen's intervention has made things massively different.
He's given people permission. He's given people agency to actually step forward, step up, to challenge, to do stuff in a way that is part of the club's ethos rather than, oh, we're just doing it for them. He's actually mainstreamed it as part of the club. We don't do that here. And like you were saying, your mate said, we don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same thing, but it's sent from that position of mega authority and icon status in a way. And when I spoke with fans who had challenged that behaviour following Jurgen's piece with me, that was just absolutely mind-blowing because it was fans who were in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even in their 80s, who were choosing to be the ones that tapped somebody on the shoulder and said, hey, you, stop that. And just knocking it on the head straight away. And to have that level of recognition that everybody's a valued part of the fan base and we're not something that's, oh, we put up with them over there and we have to deal with them sensitively. It was far more about, no, we're all part of the fan base and we don't have a go at each other in that way.
When that happens, when someone like Jurgen steps in, and listen, let's be clear about this, not every football club's got a Jurgen Klopp. We're very fortunate to have a Jurgen Klopp in a number of different ways. But a lot of this conversation is about leadership from the top. I think that supporters themselves, there should be an onus on them. But feeling as though, Paul, you've got permission to challenge to speak, I feel is a really important part of this discussion, that individuals feeling as though in this environment we have permission to speak. And the first place that permission comes from is the football club. And whatever passes for the football club, whether that's fellow supporters or a hierarchy, that permission's massive.
I think it is, but I think there's also something to be said about the past 10 years and more of conversations that we've had with fellow fans and getting them on side in a passive sense. We've done over the last 8-9 years easily. And then to culminate with Jurgen saying his piece, switch them from being non-homophobic to being anti-homophobic. And I think that's the big switch that we need to get triggered elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it's such a good point because I think realistically with these things, people aren't always on the same page, and not necessarily because the page that they're on is a bad one, just because they don't really understand what's going on, what the conversation is, how people feel. I think a big thing with the video with Jurgen was it made people realise why the chant was bad and how it would upset people. Like, I've had people say, even the other day I had someone saying to me, like, the main thing that changed my perspective was knowing that it made people feel bad, made me not want to do it and made me think, actually, you know, I'll tell other people not to do it. And so I think in terms of, like, driving a conversation of, like, inclusivity around LGBT footy fans, it's just giving people that information that they need.
So as part of that then, you know, there are things happen at football matches that are downright malicious, Olivia. You know, there's actions that people take that are downright malicious. Do you think part of this sort of education piece, therefore, is making people aware of what they may not feel is downright malicious to the people around them, is hurting them? So finding ways to channel that, to tell that story, to say, listen, this stuff, you think it's just part of something else. Actually, it's doing this to some of your friends.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's absolute malice. People will act in malice, and that's like, you need a different approach to that. But there is people who will act in ignorance, or people who just won't act at all because they're not people engaging in these chants to be homophobic, but they're just not conscious of the fact that other people are affected by them. And I think, like, when you are a fan in the ground that is picking up on these things, you're picking up on them because that's your experience. But if someone just doesn't know that it's not sound. So, like, it is, it's about, like, just letting people, like, raising awareness in that way.
The number one, in effectively 71% of people are concerned about the homophobia, but the number one form of online hate in football is homophobia, Paul. And I think these are the two linked but slightly different conversations, and where the idea there's permission within the space to find a way to be homophobic in an online sense, I think is something which takes a sort of a different form of challenge. In lots of ways, it's actually a slightly tougher form of challenge. And it's one that, because people feel as though they can distance themselves from it quite quickly, the challenge becomes a slightly more complicated one. Do you think that's fair?
Sorry. I think it's really important that we continue to challenge online hate and individual messages, to do the reporting, to do the, you know, taking note of something, taking the minute to report it and sending those issues through, because actually some of the platforms don't detect things automatically like they should and could do. And they've switched off some of the algorithms on Twitter and so on that allows all kinds of nonsense to come through. So the reporting needs to take place in a really systematic way by us. And I've gone through after a Rainbow Laces Day, I might have filed 100 different reports on Twitter. And do it for imagery, do it for words, do it for threats. You know, I've had somebody threaten to stab me up if they saw me at the match online because they're a big hard keyboard warrior. You know, and that kind of stuff is enabled because of the anonymity to a degree. But equally, if you're online and you see it, then if something's, you know, really offensive, then actually, surely as a decent person, your first thing to do is say, well, that's not on. Just flag that for a report. It takes 30 seconds. Do it.
Within all of this, Liv, so much of it appears to me to be a conversation around where people's perception of what is or isn't possible slash allowable exists. And what I mean by that is, so we've had the conversation, for instance, about Jürgen changing that, the idea of what comes before Jürgen is 10 years of finding the journey towards the moment where when Jürgen steps into that space, everyone's ready for it on the one hand. And then on the other hand, the feeling that you can actually communicate in ways that are sort of filled with hate because there's mainstream media that's doing it. You see other people doing it on social as well, that all those bits and pieces exist. And for me, what has to, the thing to happen is for us to find the language to close off those negative aspects, that's the bit that's got to be sort of shrunk away from this wider conversation.
Yeah, I think as well, just like as part of that is that, like, you know, we're kind of moving forward with this, like this more inclusive approach of being a club, and it's nice. It's all right as a fan just to be like, oh, I'm just gonna let that chant go. You know, like, you don't, people don't need to hold on to things for dear life. If do you know what I mean? Like, people, one of the main things around the Chelsea Rent Boy chant was like, oh, well, we've been singing it for years. And it's like, all right, well, we're telling you now. We've probably been telling you the whole time.
And there's loads of other chants.
Yeah. There's loads of well better, well more funny, well in, you know, with the Beatles to the background. So.
I think on that, Paul, how do you get, it is sort of having gone through that process sort of once and then other fronts open up, and we know that nothing's ever finished, nothing's ever settled 100%. You know, other fronts opened up. We are, for instance, still within months of the Qatar World Cup, as an example. We're still, you know, and the many reactions around that. We're still, for instance, in the climate of you know, links of for instance, Qatari owners of Manchester United, and that throws a certain thing open, which does not, let me be crystal clear, reflect them in any way, shape or form on Manchester United supporter base or their MUSD supporter base by any stretch of the imagination. But this stuff's constantly re-emerge in one way or another, and sort of having an awareness for you. I mean, it must be almost nightmarish at times that there's the idea that there's something new, something different, something fresh. And there were links to, for instance, with Liverpool and Qatari ownership very recently too.
So you can look at it as whack-a-mole, and it's popping up here and it's popping up there. Or you can do what we try and do, which is focus on the values that bind us together. Focus on the things that define us in what we feel to be Liverpool fans, and think about how we can engage and work on that as the founding values and principles of what we're about, rather than what we're not about. Because what we're not about is loads and loads of different things. And when they pop up, if they're in line with our values, that's all well and good. If they're not in line with our values, then we've got something to refer back to and say, hang on, is that what we're really about? Mm. And to challenge it in that way.
Because of the whack-a-mole aspect of it, Paul, you know, I'm sure there's some people listening or watching this who can feel at times quite tired of whacking, or quite tired of feeling as though there's whacking to be done.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it's important that the activism, and you and Liv both come from this in different ways. You know, Olivia's background in Homotopia and that more sort of creative industry, you directly with the football club, but Olivia coming to matches, and I'm sure you've been to the theatre and been part of Homotopia stuff as well. But my point here is that trying to find that way to re-energise this approach, stuff like this campaign here with Hope United, trying to find ways to re-energise and keep the energy up, share that energy with that approach. Activism's not a, you know, it's not something that should just be a drain on a person, is what I'm trying to say here. And anyone who's listening to this, I wouldn't want them to feel like, oh, and there's this. It's more the idea of this is the idea of people coming together. It is the idea of people being able to feed off each other's energy. It's not the idea of you just on your own being drained.
And you know what? This last year when we did the piece with Homotopia and yourselves, to be able to sit down on a panel in the club shop, chat things through, talk about some of the issues we've individually faced and have some really interesting questions thrown at us as well. That was an amazing buzz. When we march at Liverpool Pride, you know, that is a massive buzz because we've got allies like yourselves and others, and we're celebrating who we are. And we get the backing of our football club, and we have so many people around the world focusing on such positive, lovely aspects of life, and the fact that they're affirming that me and my husband can exist as a family, as it were, and live. You can be yourself in any aspect you want to be. And to have our football family,
Hashtag LFC family.
Yeah, that's the one. but to have that part of our lives just as acknowledging as to other parts of our lives, I think it's dead important. And it's nice to have that support and that recognition that's a validation almost.
Yeah.
With that, Liv, you know, I'll come to the same thing, the same aspect. There'll be underneath this is going to go on YouTube, there will be negative comments, there will be homophobic comments, I'm almost certain underneath this. What I'd want, you know, and I'm setting this challenge for anyone who's listening to this, engaging with it, let's drown those comments out. That's part of the positive energy sort of chamber that you want to create here, is that those comments are drowned out just simply because that is a reaffirmation of the values on the one hand, but the other thing that it also does is it gives people energy on the other.
Yeah, I think really interesting point about the energy around activism. Like, I think myself, it's probably similar to you, Paul, like years and years into it, you're kind of trying to constantly figure out how not to let it just ruin your day, or, you know, avoiding burnout at all costs. And I think for me, the main thing I do is just try and go in, try and see everything as just a, like, still just trying to have a good time, with whether that's just, you know, going on a night out, going the match, going on the internet, just like trying to see the good in it. And I think to kind of back that up with any kind of homophobia online, if you see something that's like talking about LGBT inclusion in football, back it, share it, yeah, get behind it.
Or throw some humour in the mix that's appropriate. You know, one of the funniest things got thrown out there by one of the responders to the video with Jürgen was, yeah, that's all well and good, but can Paul play midfield? The answer is no, I can't.
The question's still going.
It is still going. Listen, it's been a pleasure. In general, I'll say it again about underneath this, and whenever you see it, anything that you see on it, feel free to respond with positivity, share that positivity across the board. Any large congregation of humans is inherently political. You may not like that, and you might not want to engage with that, and that's understandable. I often don't want to engage with the reality of it either, but the truth of the matter is any large congregations of humans is inherently political. We have our values, we have what we want. We have what we want for most people in the world, the vast majority of people. We want them to be able to enjoy themselves and have a very, very good time indeed without being judged. I don't see any of this as being particularly complicated. If you do see it as particularly complicated, I think you're just seeing it the wrong way. Football's for everyone. Thank you very much to Paul and to Olivia. And thank you indeed to EE Hope United for giving us the opportunity to have this conversation. These are conversations you can have whenever you want, but it is good to have them as much as we can. Podcast Network.